Good morning, everybody in POV land. This is Reed Koberger coming to you with the Pit POV Sunday morning podcast. This one's May 20th from beautiful downtown Columbia, Maryland in the POV recording studios. It's finally a dry day. We've had rain for the last 3 days down here in Maryland, and it's a day to get out and do some stuff that I need to do on the back deck and get ready for the rest of the spring and the summer. But before that, let's talk a little bit about Pit football. Because there's some things to talk about, I think. Well, one is, I hope you guys enjoyed the Ricky Town article I put up. Now, I want you to understand, that's one chapter. I think I'm going to have three full. I just finished, everything's in draft form. I posted up the first one. And as you can see, that was really background material on transfers. Last season's how it unfolded, but also on the transfer situation under Pat Narduzzi. He's been very reliant upon transfers, and I'm not real happy with that. I know some people don't have a problem with it. I think it's desperation, and I think we're going to see that this year. But, you know, he's had successes with transfers too, as I mentioned in the article. Nate Peterman, of course, if we didn't have Nate Peterman over the 15 to 16 seasons, we might really have had hard times. Especially 2016 with our defense as bad it was. And if you remember, it was terrible. It was horrible. Even a run defense wasn't good that year. I think it was 80th or something like that, up in the 60s or 80s. But of course, the pass defense was 127th or something like that. And almost every major category is the worst in the nation. So, you know, kudos to Pat Narduzzi for getting Nate Peterman in. But, and then Arahu Lopes, the wide receiver, is another transfer that's worked out well for him. So that's two. I don't want to go back into the article right now. But I think we have 10 or 11 transfers, 12 maybe, transfers that have come in and played since Pat Narduzzi got here. I went back and looked at previous years, and that was by far the most I've seen back toward Dave Wannstedt. When I go back looking at Pitt football, I don't ever go back really past Dave Wannstedt, because that's 14 years ago now. You know, his first year, 2005. But anyway, I did the article in a little separate thing, and I wanted to explain a little bit. So I have chapter one up, and I hope people enjoyed it. I really tried to write as well as I could for that. And I want people to understand, I know that when we think of the Pitt POV and the POV family, we think about the commenters, the readers and the commenters who are so gracious in their time and their effort to put up those really detailed comments. I love every one of them, even if they're, you know, racking me across the coals. But I want everyone to understand, I write for hundreds of thousands of readers, literally. Well, if I repeat myself or if I state the obvious, it might be a reader picking the POV up for the first time in a week or 2 weeks or a month or something, whatever it is, and I want them to get in on the ground floor. So I try not to use shortcuts when I write serious articles like that. I try not to use shortcuts and assume that the reader knows what I'm talking about. Now, of course, all the commenters probably know, because we talk about this stuff so often that it becomes repetitive. And, you know, in a normal article and or normal comments, we can just allude to something, and the reader commenters, the ones that come on most often, pretty much know about that. So I wrote that in a different vein. I wrote that for the general reader. You know, like I said before, we have readers steadily in 102 countries, which freaks me out. But so you can imagine that there's people all over the world that follow Pitt football. There's Pitt alums everywhere, of course. And so when I'm doing that, I'm writing for them. Now, chapter two, I'm going to try to do this on Saturdays, because that gives, there are longer articles. That first one was 2,500 words. Right now, the total article about Ricky Town and what he's walking into or coming into and what I think might happen and his background, which I think is really interesting. He's an interesting kid, young man, I should say, is 9,000 words now. Now, you know, short story is between, you know, 10,000 and usually about 5,000 and 20,000 words. So I'm writing a short story on this. So I'm splitting it up into three chapters. And I want to explain why I closed the comments on those. Because I don't want us to get bogged down. And this article took me a long time to write. Matter of fact, I want to tell you how I kind of started finishing this up in a minute. But I didn't want us to get bogged down with comments and back and forth discussions and arguments until the readers have had a chance to read the whole story. And that's why I asked in a comment when I said I posted the Ricky Town article up. I wanted you guys to kind of hold off on that for a while as a courtesy to me and to the other readers, so that we can see the whole body of work, and then we can talk about that. Now, you know, of course, we've talked about Ricky Town, we've talked about transfers and all this, but I'm trying to bring everything together in a hopefully a well-written article that really explains what's going on. Now, as I said in the article, and I really mean this, most times we really, you know, it wasn't too far back when we used to kind of look at Dave Wannstedt, and Paul Chris to an extent, but Dave Wannstedt mostly, he would very rarely play the backup quarterback, even get him snaps. I think I remember one or two years where the QB2 never got snaps at all, not even in a blowout or if we were getting our asses kicked. And I never agree with that. I think you play these kids, you get these kids playing time, just to, if anything else, just to get the jitters. But they need to have small successes. And if you get a kid in for a series or two and he doesn't throw an interception, that's a success for these young quarterbacks, you know? So that was the reason I'm concentrating on Ricky Town, not only because his story is kind of fascinating, but also because we saw last year how damn important the backup quarterbacks are. Now, we can go back and forth about when Kenny Pickett should have played. Was he ready to play? Now, I have to tell you, you know, I have offline information from one of the readers, a friend of mine, who got some good skinny and said basically the staff felt that there was other things going on with Kenny Pickett in the beginning of the year, of the season, where they felt it would be best to hold him out. Now, I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to say I know what it was, but that could be, you know, when a kid comes in his freshman year, it could be adjusting to academics. That's something we don't think about as Pitt fans very often. But some of these kids, when we think they're going to play right away and they don't play, and I think Paris Ford, I think Paris Ford ran into this too. But I know that some other players where you think, why didn't they play him as a freshman? And it's because they have to get their feet wet first in the university itself. And they have to adjust to being away from home for the first time, having harder academics. Almost every kid that comes into Pitt has had harder academics all of a sudden than they had in their high school years. And, you know, it could be that they're leaving their girlfriends for the first time or away from home, they're homesick. And there's a lot of things that go in to the dynamics of if a kid plays football or not. It's not always just football. But luckily we saw Kenny Pickett in the last two games, a little bit with the six snaps earlier after, midseason. But then again, you know, then he really, of course, he saved our bacon in that Miami game, and thank goodness for that. But what we saw writ large, truly, was the need for a competent backup. Now, I have some pretty firm thoughts about this year's backup situation. And I'm going to write that. I'm going to be very honest in the last two chapters of my story about Ricky Town. And it's not because I don't think Ricky Town's skilled. I think he might be pretty skilled. I really wish I could see him throw the ball and stuff like that. And I think, you know, I was talking to a couple of the other writers last time we were up in Pittsburgh. And Pro Timing Day, I think it was. And we were talking about the fact that we can't really formulate opinions about kids because we don't have an opportunity to at least see them and sometimes talk to them. And see, that's the most important thing. When we go to a scrimmage, if they had open practices like they did with Wannstedt and with Chris, you could stand around on the sidelines and just listening to other conversations, listening to other players talk about a third player, and usually it's very positive, of course, Or sitting around and just, you know, siding up to one of the players and saying, hey, you know, what do you think about this kid? You know, I mean, how's, you know, like different things like that. So not only are you watching them practice and you're watching them throw the ball, but, you know, then you can formulate. And then we can pass that on to the readers, the Pitt fans. Pitt fans, look, they're like sponges. You guys are like sponges. I am too. I wanted to know as much as I can about the kids that play ball for Pitt and how they're doing. So, you know, I know a lot of people think that I have some kind of resentment, Pat Narduzzi, about the close practices. I don't really have a resentment. I just think it's a huge mistake. And I think it hasn't paid off at all for him. A bit. Not one bit. Anyway. So, we saw very clearly last year how important the kids behind the starting quarterback were. And now, in the offseason, we saw two pretty major moves with Ben DiNucci leaving and Tom McVitie leaving. But Ben DiNucci in particular. And I know you can make all these arguments you want about, oh, he had a bad attitude. He had a bad attitude for a reason, folks. He was misled by that coaching staff. And I would get pretty close to saying lied to by the coaching staff about what was going on behind the scenes that we fans didn't see. But we saw it when they, you know, when he were doing the interviews and he said, well, Coach Narduzzi told me I was a guy. And then Narduzzi comes back up and says, well, we never told him that. Well, one of those guys are lying. You know that. So he said, sayonara, I'm going somewhere else where I'm appreciated. And I think that was it more than anything else. I don't think Ben DiNucci ever thought he was going to be a starting quarterback at Pitt. I don't think he ever logically and honestly believed he was going to be a starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Panthers. I think McVitie did. But I think Ben DiNucci knew he was going to be a QB2 and knew he had no shot at the NFL. And it's just too bad that happened for a lot of different reasons. But for one reason, it's because I want a backup that's thrown a D1 pass, my friends. I want a backup that's won football games for Pitt, that has thrown touchdowns and has exhibited leadership. And that's something we have no idea about Ricky Town. We have no idea. Now, I have a little bit more of an idea than you readers do, and I'm going to try to impart some of the things that I've talked to sports writers back in Ventura County, California, where he played high school, at St. Bonaventure, played high school ball. I talked to those guys, and I talked to the guys from Ventura Community College, two of the sports writers that have been covering that area for a long time. So I have some insights I'm going to impart to you in that article. I didn't really want to start talking off for 12 minutes about that Ricky Town article. All I'm asking is I really appreciate you guys understanding why I'm holding off on the comments and then what's going to come down the pike. Now, I'm going to try to have them out on Saturdays, okay? So I think you guys will enjoy it. But to me, it might be the big story of the 2018 season for Pitt. It really might be. And one of the reasons is Kenny Pickett's supporting cast on the offense, especially the offensive line, I don't think is going to be able to protect him very well. And, you know, what we've seen from Kenny Pickett is he doesn't hesitate to take off. I don't think we've seen many called plays where he tucks and runs on purpose. But he'll pull that ball in, and he'll run with it. And so I don't know if they're going to try to make him more of a pocket passer, try to protect him somehow, but I think we're going to have a porous offensive line. I think he's in danger back there. So we may well see the QB2 play ball this year. Okay. That's what I wanted to talk about with that, because I've been spending a lot of time with that. And I'll talk a little bit later on about, how I just spent 3 days. I'll talk about it now. I just spent a great 3 days with my daughter. My daughter's 28, married, 28 years old. We're obviously very close. My kids are so nice. One of them lives 2 blocks away. He's 34. And my daughter lives 7 minutes away. They chose to stay. They could have gone anywhere pretty much. But they chose to stay really close to my wife and I, which I really appreciate. So we have a close family. Well, last Monday, I rented... The thing about the military is a lot of the military bases have recreational, we call it MWR, morale, welfare, and recreation. They have like cottages or hotels and camping grounds or RV sites But anyway, Fort A.P. Hill down here in central Virginia have some beautiful log cabins, really beautiful, right on this big-ass lake. And Fort A.P. Hill is really an interesting place because it's 75,000 acres or something. It's huge. It's huge. One of the biggest bases I've ever seen. Some bigger ones in Texas and California, I think. But it's the sole purpose is warfare fighting training. Warfighting training. So it's just nothing but woods with a looping road that goes around and then these little roads going off shooting to the different training areas and it, where the cabins are located. So I had this reserved for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night, right? We're going to go out there and just enjoy ourselves. I need to get away from stress. So we have some things going on in our family that I just wanted to say. My wife said, just, you know what, just go and have fun. So we get there. We drive there. It's about two hours away. I wanted to miss the traffic in D.C., so we left a little bit later. And we got to the front gate right at 7 o'clock on Monday night. And as soon as we got through the front gate, we had this, like, map that they had online, which was rather a crude map trying to show you where this cabin was. The cabin we were in is called Field Cabin. A derecho hits, and I don't know if you guys don't know what a derecho is. It's like a mini tornado, and it hit hard. I mean, it went from 7 o'clock, you know, kind of daylight to nighttime in like 3 minutes with 60-knot winds, at least 60-knot winds. I know windage pretty well. And rain that you couldn't even see out of the windshield. I mean, we were driving around this huge base, had no idea where we were, couldn't see signs, nothing. And I mean, it was so eerie. And my daughter started getting a little bit scared, to be honest, you know, because we couldn't find anything. We're driving around for like an hour, and we keep going in these little false starts, and we somehow ended up on this little road that's like the access road right at the lakeside. And these winds, I have a Prius wagon, right? And so these winds are like moving this car all over the place. I'm driving, I'm a good driver. And I'm like, you know, so I was a little nervous, but I wasn't, my daughter was scared. And she goes, this is how it happens, Dad. This is how it starts. And I go, what are you talking about? And she goes, and she ripped off some game, you know, computer game title where the killers come out of the woods and catch you. She was kind of nervous. So anyway, finally, after an hour of doing this, I mean, it was pretty stressful. So I said, screw it, let's go back to the front gate. And we just happened to see this little 1-foot by 6-inch sign on the road that said field with a little arrow to it. So we go, and so finally we find it. And even then, we still had to drive. I'll show you how big this base is. 7.5 miles from the front gate to the cabin, to the turnoff for the cabin. So anyway, so even then, we still had about a tenth of a mile going through the woods on this gravel road, and we finally come up to this beautiful log cabin. It was really nice. We get there, no power. We're in the middle of nowhere, no power. But at least we were safe, and the boogeyman wasn't going to kill us, you know. So anyway, so we get there, and my daughter's pretty smart. I don't know if this is a known hack or not, but she took a water bottle and put it on top of her cell phone flashlight, and it just illuminated the whole room. Anyway, it's a three-bedroom log cabin built in the 1960s right on the lake. And it was so spread out, you couldn't even see any of the other cabins. Couldn't even hear them or anything. Well, even power came back at 3 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, so I had a chance to work on this Ricky Town article. I was sitting there on this big, beautiful screened-in front porch right on the lakeside. And I had, you know, I had my coffee and my cigarettes. And my daughter was in there doing her thing. And I was out there. It was just a wonderful 3 days. So, So that's what I did. And so anyway, if any of the military members are out there, Fort A.P. Hill recreational cabins, look them up. They're great. They're fantastic. It was $100 a night, I believe. Anyway, they comped us that first night. So anyway, that's a little aside of what happens in the Koberger household for fun, I guess. So, let's talk about some interesting things. We have the Pitt-Penn State game going to be televised on ESPN. It's moved to the evening, 8 o'clock at night. And isn't that going to be fun? Now, the question remains, is whether or not it's going to be a game day. The ESPA game day situation where they bring the announcers down and they set up the booths and everything. And it would be great to have that. And I didn't realize this, but the last time Pitt hosted ESPN game day, was back in the back in Dave Wannstedt's first game against I believe Notre Dame. I don't know if it was the very first game or not, but it was a big game against Notre Dame. That was from the, Heinz Field, and it was, of course, we got killed, 42-21. Anyways, that's the 2015, so what's that, 14 years, 13 years since we've had that. And I'm really hoping they do it because I think us Pitt fans deserve something really nice. And the advertisement would be great. And it'd be fun to do that. I'm not one that will go up next to the booth and wave or anything. I'm not like that, but I hope other fans have a chance to do that. It would just be a really nice touch, especially coming off last year, a little disappointing year. And this offseason hasn't been a real positive news offseason as far as football goes either. It just doesn't seem to be anything that we can really jump up and clap about happening in the offseason so far. So wouldn't that be fun to have that going on? And that'll be September 8th. It'll be our second game. Our first game will be against Albany, which, look, I get nervous about these people call them rent a cream puff or whatever it is. I get nervous about these games because we've lost them in the past. And not only that, I think we always underestimate. Now, Albany's not a very good, they shouldn't be in the, I'm not going to say they shouldn't play us. They should play us because that's how they, these teams that when we pay them like $500,000, $350,000, and that's their football budget for the year. So they know, they kind of know they're going to get their, they get a loss there, and we kind of hope we're going to get a win. But, and it works out better for two people. Now, you guys know my thoughts about having three or two of those types of games. I think you give the fans what the best football you can possibly give them. But, other people disagree. They want those wins. I'm never one of those guys. I thought YSU was going to give us a tough game. I really did. And we almost lost that game. We almost lost to YSU. We didn't outplay them. Matter of fact, I think they kicked our asses. Of course they did in the second half. And then, Max Brown tossed that TD to Weah. So that was a nice one. Now we squeaked by that one. So let's hope we do a little bit better than squeak by Albany. But Albany will be September 1. And then, of course, this Penn State will be the second one there. So, let's see. I was looking at the scholarship board. Chris Peek is nice enough to finish this up. To polish these up all the time and post them. So, let's take a look at that for a second. And it looks to Chris and to me, because I'm reading it, that we are we are at 84 scholarships now. Pitt is allowed to carry 85 scholarships. And they're allowed, for those who don't know the NCAA rules, 85 scholarships is the limit. 25 scholarships is the limit you can give per year average. So so we are one under. We have 16, this is interesting, we have 18 true freshmen, 18 redshirt freshmen, kids that didn't play at all last year, and I'll talk about some of those because they're going to be hopefully keys. Sophomores, we have Kenny Pickett, of course, is a sophomore, 21 of those, 11 juniors, and that's, when I say junior, that's redshirt, junior, and regular, and then 16 seniors. And let's go ahead and look at some of those. Cal Adamidis, the long snapper, who did pretty well last year, he made some great tackles on the special teams. He's got a scholarship now, so that's a nice thing, isn't it? It's always good to award. It's always nice when you see a kid that comes in as a walk-on and gets awarded a scholarship. I think that's a great reward for hard work and dedication to the team. So I think our redshirt freshmen and our sophomores are going to play a big part. It's a running back. We have Salahuddin coming in as a freshman. We have Todd Sibley. We haven't seen Sibley. We're going to have to get contributions from our redshirt freshman wide receivers. We're going to have to, because our wide receivers is an area that scares me. We only have, I think they have a combined, if you take, they have a combined 105 catches total, the returning receivers, And I think Lopes accounts for like 80 of those. And after that, we have, I have to look that up. After that, we have like none, you know. So hardly any. We have like 30 with, I don't believe, any touchdowns. So maybe one touchdown after that. So Dontavius Butler Jenkins, Michael Smith, and Darren Street. You know, people are high on Michael Smith. We really need this. Taysier Mack, I don't think, is going to be able to play this year. I don't. June is when the NCAA is going to come out with a determination whether players can transfer right away and play. Taysier Mack will play for that if the NCAA decides to go with that, to allow that to happen. I think they should. Boy, I don't know. I don't like the idea of these kids not. I like the idea of them having to sit out a year. Because other than that, it's going to be like George Steinbrenner and the New York Yankees. You know, it's going to be, you know, we're going to take your best player. Boom. We're just going to take him away from you. We want him to play. He doesn't have to sit out. I mean, what would stop Alabama from coming over and taking, you know, Tyler Boyd? Or someone like that. Say, look, we're going to win a national championship. I want you to play on our team right now. Forget about sitting around for 2 years and paying your dues at Alabama. You could play automatically for your senior year here or your junior year. We're going to lose some. We're going to lose players if that happens, and I do not like it. I think that they should sit out. I don't. You know, they get that extra year. They get 5 years to play for specifically for that reason. But if we can get Taysier Mack to play this year, I think I'm with. By the way, Pat Narduzzi agrees with me. He's come out publicly. He says he does not agree with that. We're getting rid of the sitting out rule, and I agree with him with that. But if they do fall on that decision, they falls that way, then we're going to have a pretty good one in Taysier Mack, I think. At tight end, this is interesting. We have Grant Kerrigan and Charles Reeves, two kids that never played. Tyler Sear, I think, got one catch last year. And they're trying to get another transfer tight end now. It just never stops. It just never stops with the transfers. They're trying to get I forget where the kid's from. But we're trying to get like how well it worked out for us the last two transfers we got for tight ends. But anyway, if you're not recruiting well enough, that's what you do. Our defensive end, Deslin Alexander, I don't know anything about that guy. Really? Patrick Jones, Rashad Weaver, James Folsom, and Dwayne Hendricks. Other than Weaver, Hendricks has not shown us much, has he? You know, it was interesting. I was just looking at this 2018 spring guide, talking about Dwayne Hendricks, and he was like second on a team in tackles for loss and third on a team in sacks, which sounds really good, but when you look at the numbers, we were terrible in those categories on defense last year. So, you know, being second when you're not good at something is not a shining example. So we have, now defensive tackle, Twyman. I think Twyman might be pretty interesting. We lost Cam Carter, thank gosh. You know, boy, that was a mistake in my opinion, but he took a scholarship from somebody and played sparingly. I don't understand why he was even with us, but I have a different outlook on things. But anyway, Jalen Twyman looks like he might be a good one, and he played pretty well in the spring ball. But as I always kind of cringe when some sports writers say the staff's really high on this guy, because you know what, the staff's high on everybody. I haven't ever heard any of the staff members, I mean even in casual conversation, say, you know, he may not be a starter in his career. I've never heard them say that to anybody. And this is why this coach speak gets me. I mean, you take everything with a grain of salt. My gosh. Anyway. Twyman's there. And then we have Keyshawn Camp, Rashad Wheeler. Wheeler might be okay. Watts and Shane Roy. Now, you guys know my... And I don't have anything against the kid. I mean, the young man, personally. It's just that I think if you have a guy like Shane Roy and Mike Herndon and Connor Dantino and Mike Herndon are fifth-year seniors who never played. And we might have them as starting offensive. They never played. And we might have these guys as starting offensive linemen this year. Or Herndon on the defensive line. But I think he's going to be solidly offense this year. I mean, does that send warning bells up to anybody? I mean, I could understand it if you played sparingly and got a bunch of games. Now, I mean, Connor Dentino got in 12 games. He was on the special teams coverage. He was on the coverage of special teams, which doesn't mean anything when you're an offensive tackle. So, I mean, to me, that's like bing, bing, bing. I mean, you know, that's one of the reasons I think our offensive line's going to suck. But, you know, and the cornerback and the safeties, I think these guys are interesting. And I think this is an interesting subject, mainly because Pat Narduzzi, built his reputation on the MSU defensive backs, and we just have not seen that at all. We haven't seen it at all. Jordan Whitehead played pretty well his first year. But you know what? I mean, every year that he was here, we kept talking about, and now his first and second year, I can understand, but they were still playing inherited players in the defensive backfield. And don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if we see, you know, Motley or Briggs playing. You know, one thing Pat Narduzzi does is he surprises people sometimes. Well, anyway, so for the, and I don't know anything about the rookie, the true freshman, Levique Carter, Eric Halleck, Justin Talander. I don't know anything. Paris Ford, I think, might be a key for the season. He's a redshirt freshman. And if one thing we desperately need on Pitt is turnovers. We are terrible at that. You know, I'll get to this in a second, but I didn't realize we are so poor in red zone offense. We only scored 77%, which was 105th in the nation. 105th red zone offense, and our kickers sucked last year. You know, 50% kicker is not good. And, you know, we just weren't pushing the ball in like other teams were. We had a pretty good red zone defense, though. That was interesting. So anyway, Paris Ford, if he can, he was a ball hawk in the spring. That's what I talked to a guy up there who's at every practice, and he said Paris Ford looks like the real deal. So it looks like they're going to keep him a cornerback instead of a free safety like he played in high school. And then we have Mathis and Pinnock as sophomores, Dane Jackson, who looks to be a good one. He's played pretty well. And then Philip Motley, though I think it'll be Paris and Jackson. I mean, Paris Ford and Jackson. And then as safety, we have Campbell, Coleman, Bryson Gardner, Hamlin. Hamlin's probably going to start. Hasn't really done much, but he's going to start. And probably Phil Campbell, I would think. And we might see Briggs there. And then our specialists, I'll tell you, I am very concerned about our punting game. Very concerned. He did not do well in the spring game. He has not done well in the spring practices. He's a, he's a shanker. Let's put it that way. I think this is very interesting because a lot of times teams won't even use a scholarship on a kicker and a punter. I don't get that, because every time those two guys set foot on the field, they're doing something important. The kicker's either pushing the place kicker's either pushing the offensive back as far as he can on their first possessions where they're going to possess the ball, or he's going to be trying for 3 points, or a point after, of course, but 3 points in a time of need. And the punter is. You know, we can talk all we want about, again, a half a yard. You know, we were better at a half yard rushing defense than we were last year. You know, punters kick, when they push the guys back 45 yards as opposed to 35 yards, that's a big freaking deal. The punter's a really important person on our team, and people don't treat him like that. Winslow was very good for us. Winslow was very good. He averaged, I think, 42, 43 yards his career at Pitt or something like that. He was very good. He was a second team, I believe, All-American. Third, maybe. I mean, not All-American, All-ACC. Anyway, I'm going to hold my breath every time Chris Dulu gets out there, the kid from New Zealand, and kicks, because I've been hearing scary stuff. And Kessman is not that accurate. I don't think he's done a whole lot of anything, really. So, anyway, that's a little bit. We're one scholarship down, so expect another transfer. They really, by the way, the staff really thought we were going to get Jaquan Brister. I made a call yesterday. They really thought we were going to get him. And they didn't. And then the other kid had just went to Purdue. So those were that last scholarship right there. The kid that went to Purdue was a recruit, but the Jaquan Brister, they really, really were heavily recruiting him, trying to get him to come to Pitt. And of course, he chose Penn State. That was a pretty big blow, actually. So anyway, we have one scholarship to deal with. Just one other point on special teams. I just pulled up the special teams part of the spring 18 media guide here. Alex Kessman led Steelers. Kickers almost always lead the team in scores, unless you have someone like Dorsett or McCoy or somebody. He had 67 points, 11 of 19 field goals, 58%, not very good. He had a big leg, but it was inaccurate. He kicked tying the Pitt record 56-yard field goal and a 55-yarder, and he had 29 touchbacks, 50%, which is a little bit low. And then, of course, Cal Automitis has got his scholarship, so that's good as a long snapper. Since we were talking about scholarships and the fact that we have one left and we're in recruiting, let's talk a little bit about recruiting. PSN, who, by the way, I think is going to be a pay site here pretty soon. This is kind of too bad, but that's the way of the world. They have something up that was published 2 days ago. And it's on May 18th, and the Pitt football staff has offered scholarships to over 220 juniors. 220. And have yet to receive a verbal commitment. Does that concern you? So they have a poll up here. And are you concerned over the lack of Pitt football commits? Yes, no, ask again in a month, which is a valid thing. And yes, the concern is not overwhelming. It's 40% with 424 votes. No, 31%, 323 votes. And ask again in a month, 29%. And that ask again in a month, I think, is a valid thing because, and I don't know why this is. Pitt is notoriously slow in the spring and the beginning of the summer with commits. But I am getting concerned because it's not working. It's not working out for us very well, I think, the recruiting. Now, the thing is, with recruiting, Chris Peake just did a really good article the other day about, I think that was yesterday. It's called The Recruiting Question, The Recruiting Question. And it's, I have all these, by the way, I have links to all these different things I'm talking about on the article today that'll be under the podcast thing. So he talks about how in 13-9, in the game everyone loves, back in 2007, what happened with our recruiting afterwards. And it was interesting. He said he had something that Dave Wan said had something, I'm going to quote this, had something tangible to sell, something more than being a Pitt guy and returning the Panthers to their Western PA roots. Chris, by the way, is a very good writer and has a really good head on his shoulders. But did they get, and they got a boost. They landed 12 recruits between December 1 and signing day, including some of the biggest scores in the class. But it didn't really carry over. Those recruits in the 2008 class who took official visits to Pitt the weekend after the 13-9 game got caught up in hype. But the prospects in the following class, 2009, weren't totally sold. In fact, Pitt didn't land a commitment until June 5, Corey King. June 5 of that year. And then he goes on to talk about the class exactly went on, and we had Dan Mason, Todd Thomas, Ray Graham, and I believe Deion Lewis was in that class too. He did pretty well with that. He goes on in this article to make a comparison to Pat Narduzzi and his win over Miami. I don't think that win over Miami has had anywhere near the impact that 13-9 did. Certainly not locally, but, you know, it's a good article and you should read it. And, I want to make something really clear about recruiting here. I am not enamored with Pat Narduzzi's recruiting. I think it's lacking. I think it's been lacking over the last 3 years. And one of the reasons is because the whole time I've been following Pitt football, and I went to school Pitt back in the 70s. I was at Pitt when Tony Dorsett was there. And then I joined the Coast Guard in 1978. So really, the 80s and the beginning of the 90s, I was all over the world, and I couldn't really follow. They didn't have the internet as much as they do now, of course. And I couldn't really follow Pitt football. But it occurs to me that every time Pitt has had a decent, good season, we've had what I call star power players. Kids that come in and really, really play well. We've seen it in the recent past with Tyler Boyd. We saw it with James Conner. We saw it with Aaron Donald. We've seen it with our running backs. Dre Graham, Deion Lewis, McCoy, of course. These are the guys that get out there and they put 13-9 is a perfect example. Pat Bostic was a quarterback. He scored a touchdown in that game, but really he did not play well in that game. But boy, didn't LeSean McCoy play well. He carried that team to victory. Much as we saw Kenny Pickett carry the Miami game on his shoulders. Without Kenny Pickett, we don't win that game. Now, Kenny Pickett doesn't have enough of a track record for me to sit here and say he's a star. I think he could possibly be a star. I think he will be one. I don't know if he's going to be a superstar up in the Dorsett, McCoy, you know, that level. I don't know if he's going to get there. That has a lot to do with supporting cast. And, I mean, we can say stars rise, but there's someone under there pushing him. And McCoy had some, Boyd had, you know, pretty decent quarterbacks thrown to him, especially Peterman. And, you know, Connor had some really good offensive lines in front of him. And McCoy did too. And so, but they're the guys that really stand out. I say they really shone. They really shined and made you really pay attention. I don't see anybody that Pat Narduzzi has recruited himself. When I say Pat Narduzzi has recruited, I don't mean in a recruiting class. I mean where he's gone out there and done the hard work to get the high school kid to commit to Pitt. Whitehead, O'Neill, and Henderson all committed to Paul Christ. But he did a lot of work to get those guys to Pitt. Now, they were in that 2015 recruiting class. So, you know, and Pat Narduzzi, you know, had to have the staff, had to play him, and he takes part in their success too. But I'm talking about going down in the high school ranks, convincing the parents, the coaches, and that kid to come to Pitt. That really, really good kid to come to Pitt. He hasn't done it yet. And he's had time to do it. So I'm very, very concerned about that because I don't think Pitt is going to be good enough overall to win without star power. Now, we point to Kenny Pickett, and there's kids. I know that there's kids on the roster, especially I just read some of those redshirt freshmen and sophomores who look like they could be pretty darn good ball players. I'm really thinking that Salahuddin might be okay. I think he might get in there and be a starter. Because what we have right now isn't cutting it. Olison, I don't know what they did with him. I don't know what they did with him. I didn't think Darren Hall was a very good starting running back for us. He had some gaudy numbers. We've talked about this in the past. He's had some gaudy numbers. But his body of work overall was not that impressive. And then A.J. Davis, who didn't really have much of a chance. I think he only had 40 carries or something like that. He'll get a chance to play more this year, especially because Aston's coming back. So Olson, I think, is going to be relegated to the sideline. But and then like Paris Ford, I'm saying he might be that ball hawk we need in the safety, I mean in the cornerback position, where he's going to get those turnovers that are going to lead to points for us. So we have some kids, I think, that could be star players, but usually these superstars break out like right in their freshman or sophomore years. They show up right away. So when I say that I'm worried about the recruiting, that is a big component of it for me. Also, I've said this many, many times, when you have to get as many transfers as we have had to do, especially look to the offensive line this year, my friends. Look to the offensive line. When you have five, oh, I'm not counting. I know there's five offensive linemen. I'm trying to count how many have taken snaps in D1 ball. We're going to have three. I think Connor Dottino's taken a few as an offensive lineman. But we're going to have Bookser and Morrison that have been regulars, as starters. And the other three positions have, like, maybe a few snaps. None. two of them for sure are not going to have any D1 snaps in the offensive line. Two of them. And that third one had maybe few. Now that scares me, and that's recruiting. That's recruiting. 2015, 2016 classes, he should have had some offensive linemen have risen up and been ready to start. And we do not have that. And I don't think we have it on the defensive line either. I think the defensive line is not as good as people think it is. We have a pretty good rushing defense because our linebackers are making we're making the tackles. But I'm not worried about the recruiting. We don't have any right now because we're still missing out on guys that. That this kid that just went to Purdue, he just posted like a week ago that he wanted to be Pitt's hometown hero. I mean, that kind of shocked everybody. It really shocked everybody that he went to Purdue after tweeting all that stuff and visiting Pitt and telling the staff they loved him and everything. Now, recruits will do that, but this is a kid from Gateway. Now, say what you will about Terry Smith at Penn State and all that stuff, but Pitt thought they had that kid wrapped up. And he just... out of nowhere, I'm going to Penn State. Something happened to make that kid make that decision so fast to go to Penn State. Now, our recruiting staff is not very good. I firmly believe that, too. And I don't think Narduzzi's a closer. I think we got real problems there. But anyway, being a little bit behind and not having any recruits isn't really worrying me that much. But then again, a week ago, I listed some of the other teams that we recruit against, especially PSU, West Virginia, and Maryland. Penn State has four. Oh, I think they just got another one, but just has four and with 1 4-star. West Virginia has 5 with 1 4-star. And Maryland has 5 with 1 4-star and 4 3-stars. And Maryland usually doesn't recruit that well. In the ACC, Florida State has 10. 7 4-stars, Miami, 13, 6 4-stars, Clemson, 12, 5 4-stars, Duke, of all people, 8 with a 4-star, Virginia Tech, 6 with 3 4-stars, and then Virginia, Georgia Tech, and Louisville, 6 4-and-2 recruits. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 ACC teams have recruits, and some of them with a bunch of stars behind their names. Now, we're not Clemson, I know that. We're not Florida State, we're not Miami. But we're not Duke either, it looks like. Duke's out recruiting us. That's something that we'll know in February. What's going to happen with that. But I just wish we didn't have to rely on the transfers because our transfers aren't panning out very well. They're just not. They're coming and going. I had an interesting email about a month ago. And I don't know if I talked about this or not. But you know, guys, I was very frustrated with Chris Clark, the tight end that came and went. Took up a scholarship for 2 years. Took up a scholarship and never took a snap because he couldn't play for a year. But he took a scholarship up. And when I look at football players and scholarships, I also look at education. The fact that we gave Cam Carter a scholarship for 1 year meant some kid that we could have recruited or that would have taken it more seriously is missing out. Because they only get one shot, folks. They only get one shot at a decent there's a high school year is when and their recruits in their high school year going into and graduating. They only get one shot to get offers from D1 schools, really. If they don't get a D1 school offer that year, they're pretty much not going to be on a D1 team. They're pretty much not going to. We see some transfers. We see some kids coming up from the JUCO ranks. I wrote about that in that Ricky Town article. But in my mind, Cam Carter and Chris Clark, all they did was take scholarships away from somebody else. Chris Clark did nothing for us on the field. He's most memorable for 2 drops and a fumble. I was pretty hard on him. So this guy writes me an email. It's kind of a strongly worded email. It's like, why can't you give this kid a break? You know, he's a young boy, he's a kid, you know, he's a... And he said he's not even 20 years old yet. I look up, Chris Clark was 23 years old last year. 23. And is making those kind of decisions. So when you're 20, 21, 22 years old, he's bouncing around to three different schools. You know, don't give me this, he's immature. I mean, he was immature as hell. Yeah. But don't give me this, he's just a young kid. And don't give me that with Cam Carter either. And by the way, and I mean this very strongly, I do believe the kids deserve second chances. They don't have to be second chances at Pitt. They don't have to be. These kids can get a good education at a lower level. Just because a kid gets in trouble somewhere else and he's trying to come to Pitt or whatever, and like when Cam Carter, when we were pursuing Cam Carter, I'm going, what are we thinking about? What are we thinking about here at Pitt? What kind of standards do we have? And the fans were like, doesn't he deserve a second chance? I go, yeah, he does. He can go anywhere he wants. Other schools will take him. It doesn't have to be a D1 Power 5 school. It doesn't have to be a D1 school. If he's serious about an education, he can go somewhere else to get an education and get a scholarship to play football. It does not have to be a Pitt. People get second chances sometimes, you know. So anyway, I didn't want to end on a negative note. But we were talking. I had a conversation with a friend last night. And we were talking about how, you know, of course, one of our long-term commenters just decided to take another hiatus. Well, you know, he can do whatever he wants to do. Let's announce it to the world that you're not going to be on the POV, like it really matters. Oh, by the way, I'm leaving. I think that's funny when people do that. But because of the negativity that surrounds the POV. Well, the negativity surrounds the program, my friends. I mean, if you look at as very clearly or as succinctly and honestly as possible from what has happened from the end of 2016 until now, what positive things, other than that Miami game and Kenny Pickett, what positive things have happened in the Pit? I'm not talking about the basketball, I'm not talking about Heather Lyke. Both those things are very positive to me. But in the basketball program, in the football program and the football team, we just had 14 players leave the team. Guys, you don't understand. That's huge. And some of those, by the way, were not, I'm leaving. Some of those were, you're going. But there's no public arrest records and no stuff like that, so I'm not going to write about that. I'm not going to ever name names about that unless there's public records. But believe me, there were some kids that just weren't going to be back, and some kind of surprising names, I think. But anyway, sit here and tell me what positive things have happened in the program, other than Pickett in Miami, since the season ended. I can't see many. And I mean, I have a pretty good, I'm not a kid. And I've been around the block a few times. I have a pretty good ability to sit there and say, okay, Reed, take the opinions and the emotions out of what you're looking at and really look at what there is. And is what you're seeing and saying and writing what is actually happening? I think I'm pretty good at that. Well, so if that's perceived as negative, I want somebody to sit there and list them in a comment. List the positive things that have happened since the end of that Miami game in this program. Now, there are a couple things. Peterson had to go, the offensive line coach. I am not excited about Borbély. He came from Maryland, and believe me, he has a whole different... The Marylander fans have a whole different opinion of Dave Borbély than Pitt fans do. And we got a career linebackers coach that was a defense coordinator years ago at some small school. That's now our defense coordinator. Now, I like Bates because I like him because he's a lieutenant in the Navy. But and he might do a good job for us. But I don't see those as being like these big jump up, really super positive things. Until I can't say that until we see what happens with them. You know, I can't say that. I can say that's a neutral thing. We replace now, getting rid of Peterson and Conklin. Now, let me rephrase it. Getting rid of Conklin was really a big deal for me. I wanted him gone 2 years ago. But let's see how Bates does first. So anyway, I don't mean to sound that there's no good things, but really, someone lay out the stuff that we can point to and say, oh, this is a really positive thing going into the next season. And I think it's funny because I have tried to be as honest about, someone asked me the other day, why do you write the, I saw T-Vacs at BJ's. Just, it was really, Tom Vax won, T-Vax won. And we had a nice little conversation about Pitt football. It was kind of, and he recognized me, which is kind of cool, I thought. And he said to me, he said, Reed, when I first started reading the POV, I didn't like it very much. I really didn't understand why you wrote the things you did. But the more I read, and the more I paid attention to Pitt football, the more I understand where you're coming from. You know, he goes, you're pretty realistic about what you say. And I, you know, we have this debate about positivity, negativity, and realism. You know, whatever it is, everyone has different opinions. But I told him flat out, and I've told other people this, I'm not going to talk about something or write about something if I'm not going to be honest about it. Now, that's just me. I believe in honesty in all things. So what I think is honest is going to rub someone else the wrong way. I understand that completely. But isn't it interesting that when you're reading the comments from the readers now, from 2 years ago, or 1 year ago, or 1 year ago, and how many more commenters are really starting to look at things and say, they're not really what I thought they were. You know, maybe we need to look at this a little differently. I've noticed it. I've noticed some commenters on there that, you know, are I wouldn't say they're negative all the time, but they went from being like totally optimistic all the time about Pat Narduzzi to more like, oh, well, you know what? We're not really sure. Let's see what it gets. And the guy that just decided to leave the POV, biggest cheerleader Pitt had. And now that people are starting to say, maybe there's not a whole lot to cheerlead about, then everything's negative. I got to go. Well, I'll go then. I think that's interesting. You know, you only pay so much attention to what I say. I'm not a guru. I'm not sitting up on a mountain telling you exactly how things are. I'm telling you how I think they are. When someone comments, that's how they think things are. If you don't agree with it, say why you don't agree with it. Or if it really bugs you the wrong way, take your ball and go home. There's a lot of Pitt football things you can look at. Blather's a great one. Chris Dokes doesn't write as much as I wish he did. Spend $9.99 and get the Rivals. I'm telling you, Chris Peek is much better than I am. And he has more access than I do. He's a worker, by the way. That guy works his ass off. But you don't have to be on the POV if it bothers you. And it's not a positive part of your life, then, you know, make a decision. Okay, I'm not sure. I'm going to try to start up the podcast again, but we really have not a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, I've gone on 58 minutes here, and it's a stream of consciousness stuff, and I try to make certain points, but you know what? I find myself wanting to put Sunday podcasts up, but there's only so much to talk about now, and I know I'm repeating myself from the articles that I've written or from things that you've commented on. So I'm going to keep putting the Sunday podcast up because why not? You know, it doesn't cost anybody anything. If you don't like what you hear, you turn it off. And if you like what you hear, let me know because I like to get complimented just like anyone else does. So we'll see. I think fall camp is going to be fascinating this year. I really do. I think that there's going to be some interesting battles, especially in the defensive backfield. I'd like to see what's going to happen. Linebacker, they're going to sit Brightwell down. I'm not sure that that's... I mean, I liked Virginis. I did, but I thought Brightwell played pretty well, too. And Virginis has never been a starter. So, you know, I do think that he's physically very talented, though. Yeah, he might be the leader in sacks. That would be cool if we had a linebacker leader. I mean, other than Adewu. Adewu's been a good ball player. I don't know why fans are down on him. All right, almost at the hour mark. Have a great weekend. Have a great week. And let's hope that we see some positive news coming out of the Pitt football camp. And there always is. You know, there's always academic. These kids go on these volunteer trips. I really should talk about that more. But, you know, we have a bunch of good, hardworking, decent citizens on the Pitt Panthers. And I'm so proud of them. I really am. I'm proud of the kids that go out above and beyond and do stuff that they don't have to do. just because it's a good thing to do for other people. I'm just a public service, and I believe in public service. Okay, guys, at the hour mark, thanks for listening, and I will see you down the road.